Good morning, sir. What is your name?
Clayton Hatfield.
Okay, Mr. Hatfield, just hold on one moment. We'll be right with you. The Honorable Mr. Louis Kowalas is going to conduct your hearing at this time, sir. So just hold right on to the phone. Mr. Hatfield, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I can.
Thank you, sir. Can you state your full name and ABC number for the record?
Clayton Hatfield, 097860.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for a 31412A hearing to consider regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. If you can see on your video conference screen, I'll begin with the opposite side of the bench of where I'm sitting, looking toward me. On the opposite side, we have the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, and we have the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. At the center of the bench, we have our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright. And my name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel lead for your hearing. I would like to begin your hearing with the following summary. Mr. Clayton Hatfield, ABC number 097860, is 65 years old. On February 23, 1993, Mr. Hatfield was found guilty by bench trial and sentenced to 10 years for attempt to commit molestation of a child, a dangerous crime against children, and also lifetime probation for attempt to commit molestation of a child, a dangerous crime against children, with an additional fine for public indecency. These crimes occurred on or about the dates between September 1987 and December 1987. He was approximately 34 years old at the time of the incident offenses. Mr. Hatfield, does this sound correct so far?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. He was released to probation on November 1999, absconded several times, and was convicted again in 2001 for sexual exploitation of a minor in Iowa. Upon release from Iowa DOC in 2010, he was returned to Arizona to serve a 10-year sentence for his probation violation. He's been eligible for regular parole since December 18, 2016. He has additional arrests, or past arrests, that is, for lewd acts, possession of marijuana, and other probation violations. It should be noted that he has a firm sentence end date of December 18th, 2021, so that would be less than 2 years away. Is that your understanding, Mr. Hatfield?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I will read a brief summary of the events in question. Mr. Hatfield sexually molested the victim, 7-year-old Tanya Tabor, on at least two occasions between September 1st, 1987, December 22nd, 1987, by touching a vagina with a vibrator in his hand. On a third occasion, he exposed himself and masturbated in front of the victim while he was at a residence. I recognize we have other guests in this room, so I apologize for the graphic nature of the description. According to Mr. Hatfield's institutional progress report, he has received limited programming in the Arizona Department of Corrections. He has a vague release plan, which includes living at the East Valley Men's Center, which I believe is here in the Valley. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. He has a limited history of discipline in the Department of Corrections from 1996 through 2017, with his last ticket upheld a minor on June 21st, 2013, for violation of department rules. This appears to be his seventh hearing before the board, but his second hearing since being returned to the Department of Corrections custody for his probation violation. We have no letters of support in his parole packet. We do have a letter from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office dated December 27th, 2018, opposing parole. Mr. Hatfield, are there any letters of support that we're not aware of or maybe that I missed in your packet?
No.
Thank you. Mr. Hatfield, this is another opportunity for the board to get to know you. Can you tell us about the crimes that resulted in your of incarceration and why you should be considered for supervised release. Thank you, sir.
Anything I would have to offer would sound like I'm trying to minimize, and I'm not. I did what I did. I have served my time. I've completed a sexual offenders treatment program. I understand what happened, why it happened, and that it's not going to happen again. But I can't offer anything to try to justify or excuse what happened. I just can't.
Well, I appreciate your position. Go through some program notes here really quick, and I wanted to double check something. I don't have a notation that you completed the sexual offender treatment program. Not denying you did, I'm just saying I'm not seeing any names. So when did you go through that?
I went through it in Iowa. It was about a three-year program while I was. It was in the transcript at my probation revocation hearing, and acknowledged by the court.
Yes, I was looking for the names, and so you attended that program in Iowa. How was that program? Did you feel that it served you?
And Arizona would do well to study that program. The programs that I was in while I was on probation were really watered down. It was almost like a fill-in-the-blank type thing. The program that Iowa uses is very intense, very aggressive, but that's what it takes to get to the root of the problem, too. Self-treatment doesn't work. In order to get to a serious problem, you have to take a serious approach, and Iowa does.
Well, I appreciate that input. From another state, I know from my past career, there's something to be said for being open-minded and learning from other programs, and that's very good input. What did you gain from that program in Iowa?
Well, Iowa takes you back right to your very first memories. I mean. And what you do is you find out where you first became introduced to problematic behavior, the things that cause you to revert to that behavior, the red flags, the triggers, so that when you get into a situation that presents a problem, you recognize it and you know what steps to take to avoid it. I know, I can tell you that while I was on probation, the judge, when they put me on probation, denied a monitor and intense probation because she said it was overkill in my case. What I learned from that program allowed me to go out into a city where I didn't know a living, breathing soul, find employment immediately, which I stayed at until the time of my violation. And nothing in my behavior indicated that I had a problem or was a problem. People were very surprised when they found out that I was on the registry. I applied what I learned and applied it successfully, but when it came down to my little sister being on her deathbed and wanting to see me, I couldn't wait around for weeks to get approval from the group, so I took off. I thought that I could get up there, see her, and get back before anyone missed me because I was taking my vacation time from work, and it was foolish and that didn't work out.
Where were you working at the time, sir?
Ace Hardware in Gilbert.
And was your sister living in Iowa or Washington?
My sister was in Washington.
Okay. So what brought you to Iowa?
I have a brother and a sister back there.
And But did you not get convicted again in Iowa for sexual exploitation of a minor, or what happened?
Yes, sir, I did. I took new photographs of a 15-year-old girl.
Okay. And when you were convicted for the instant offense in Arizona going back to the early 1990s, if I read the pre-sentencing investigation correctly, you were in denial of the Tanya Tabor case, or were you not? I mean, where have you arrived?
I was in denial of some elements of it.
And how do you feel today?
Well, there's still one inaccuracy, but it makes no difference. What I did do was deserving of the sentence that I got. I mean, there was no masturbation involved. Matter of fact, the police report said that I had had sex with a woman in her presence, and that was inaccurate. But the touching with the vibrator and the touching of the hand were true, and that alone was enough to mandate the sentence. I mean, what I was guilty of, I was guilty of. The inaccuracy was my way of trying to minimize, is what it amounts to. It was insignificant. It wasn't, you know, instead of addressing what I did do, I was trying to minimize by the inaccuracy.
So, having been through intensive sexual offender treatment in Iowa, I would just ask you directly, how long had you been attracted to children?
I suppose all of my life. It began at about age 7 or 8 when I was in the care and custody of the teenage girls. My sister and her friends pretty much took care of me because I had an abusive relationship with my mother. And that was in the back of my mind all of my life. When I became older and found myself in situations where I felt that I was out of control, I tried to revert back to that companionship with the young girls. So I suppose that had been programmed into me from an early age.
I think you may mention this. I know we discuss this very much when it comes to this type of dysfunction, but do you know what your triggers are in terms of
yes,
that
sir.
Type of behavior?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I do.
And what have you done to manage those triggers?
I've accepted responsibility as an adult. I hate to try to simplify all that in one sentence, but that's basically what it amounted to. I was lazy and irresponsible as a teenager, and that program came with me into adulthood. When I learned to become responsible as an adult, and learned that there was joy in that there was satisfaction in that, and I felt that when I was working at Ace Hardware, I understood that we all have problems, we all have difficult days. Responsible adults work through them. They don't try to escape.
Mr. Hatfield, whether this board votes to return you to the community via supervised release, or whether or not you reach your sentence end date in a little less than 2 years, what are your plans?
I would like to return back to Washington home and just spend the last days of my life knowing that the madness is over. I'm old enough now that even if I didn't have a felony conviction, it's going to be hard to find work. So I'm pretty much just going to have to retire. But I'm, you know, relieved now. The madness is over, and I can't undo what I did. But I can take some satisfaction in knowing that it's done, that it's over.
I don't want to put words in your mouth when I consider individuals with this kind of history. I often wonder if it's similar to an individual with any other kind of addiction. An alcoholic will say they're an alcoholic for the rest of their life, whether they ever take a drink again or not. So I'm asking, is that how it is for you? Is this an affliction in your mind where you feel that, okay, this is an affliction that I will always have, but that you'll manage it? Like, what is your plan for managing it?
Well, mine was an affliction of a matter of choices. Just lazy and unafraid to accept the responsibilities of adult life, adult situations. It's a matter of choice. It's not an addiction. It's a matter of choice. I don't know. I suppose that some people would refer to it as an addiction because the truth is we don't want to get out of that cycle. We choose not to get out of that cycle because it's easy way out. It's easy to victimize people. It's easy to take advantage of weaker people. You even see it in prison. And I'm just not going to make that choice anymore. I was very, very happy when I was out there accepting adult responsibilities. I had my vehicles paid for. I had they been insured. I was making my bills. I understood the happiness of being a responsible adult. And that's my choice now.
Well, thank you, Mr. Hatfield. I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you. Yes, everyone is Gilbert.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. Mr. Hatfield, what years did you take the sex offender treatment in Iowa? What year was that?
We've been from about 2007 to 2011 or so.
Okay. And
late 2007. It's about a three-year program.
Oh, right. You did say it was a three-year program. So, sir, after you took that treatment, you still continued to violate your probation.
The last step in an SOTP program is to make amends where appropriate and possible. My little sister, we were split apart at a young age, and there was a lot that we didn't get to share growing up. Her request to see me, her desire to see me, had nothing to do with the crimes. She just wanted to see me before she died so that we could make peace between ourselves. And it was important to me. I don't know if you've ever lost anyone that you're close to, but I would ask anyone who has, what would you give for that last day to say goodbye, that last chance to say goodbye? And then you'll understand why I needed that.
Okay, sir. And will you have probation to return to when you're finished with your sentence, sir?
No, sir. No, I'm sorry, ma'am.
So you have no lifetime probation, then?
Okay. No, this is the end of it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Quinones. Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Yes, the Honorable Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Hatfield, apparently when you were on probation and you had been released, you made several statements that you didn't have any family here in Arizona. You were frustrated with being on probation or parole here in Arizona. And as soon as you were put on release, you absconded. What's going to make the difference that if you didn't want to be here in Arizona, that if you were released and had to be here?
I didn't say that I was frustrated with being on probation. What I said was that I didn't have weeks In order to get permission to go see my sister, I would have had to have had permission from the group. That takes maybe taking anywhere from 2 or 3 weeks to 2 or 3 months. And I just didn't have that much time. I wasn't frustrated with being on probation at all. I was doing quite well. As a matter of fact, the probation officer was impressed with the progress I made.
So in Iowa, was looking at a report. Actually, I was looking at something from the county attorney's office that actually said a letter from the county attorney's. Did you give the girls in Iowa marijuana? Did you smoke marijuana?
No, sir,
with
I did
them?
Not.
Did you ever?
No, sir, I did not.
Did you ever do that? Are you aware that there was that allegation in there?
No, sir, I had no idea that they had alleged that.
So you said the reason that you absconded was because your sister, you wanted to see your sister?
Yes. And I had my vacation coming up. I just seen my parole officer. So I thought that I would slip up there, visit a couple of days, and get back before anybody missed me.
So
what happened was the probation office had found me a house to share with a female roommate, actually. And when they came by to let me know, of course, I wasn't there.
Mm-hmm. But you knew that if you left the state, you would be absconding in parole. Then in parole.
Yes, sir, I did. Yes, sir, I did.
So, how long did you stay in Washington?
Well, when I found out they were looking for me, I just stayed until they picked me up.
Mm, and how long was that, sir?
Oh, what? I don't know, about 5 or 6 weeks, I guess.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any further questions? Yes, Your Honorable Dr.
Yes, thank you so very much, Honorable. Mr. Gowanus, now Mr. Hatfield, how would you assure this board that if this board decided to grant you parole that you wouldn't do something again that would violate it? You know, I think I understand. I don't understand because I've never been in your shoes, but I think I understand, you know, your situation with your sister. That was the reason that, in your mind, that you needed to go and visit her at that particular time. But how can you assure this board, how can you assure me that if something else might come up in your life, some other emergency, that you just won't pick up and walk again, sir? Can you kind of assure this boy, assure me that this would not happen again, sir?
I have to tell you, if I was in your shoes, I wouldn't accept my word either. I live with these guys. I know how many sad stories, how many lies you get told. I don't blame you that you can't accept my word for it. Your responsibility to society is paramount, and nothing in my record indicates that I guess that my word is any good. I can only tell you that of all the things I've been accused of, I've never been accused of lying.
So, I think you've already answered this question. I just want to make sure what I might have missed in terms of what you've already said. If this board decided to release you, where would you reside? What are your plans, sir? What are your plans? You would reside here in Arizona, and then eventually you would try to get an interstate compact to go up to the state of Washington? Is that what I understood, sir?
Yes, sir. And at the end of this month, I'm going to be filing a motion with the court because In truth, going back on original plea agreement, it was my understanding that I was supposed to be serving 65%. So I'll be filing a motion for clarification of sentence with the court and try to get that settled. If it turns out that I have to do the last 3 years on probation, then I'll do the last 3 years on probation. If I am given credit for the 65% and final release, then I'll return to Washington. If not, then I will go with the interstate compact and try to go back. And if that fails, then I'll do my last 3 years here on probation.
And where would you, in your mind, where would you reside here in Arizona if everything else does fail? You are not given permission to go back to the state of Washington. I mean, would you go to a halfway house, or do you have someone, friends, or what would you do here, sir?
Well, I'd have to stay at East Valley Men's Center for 2 or 3 months until the social security went through, and then find housing acceptable to the probation office. They do help us find housing, so.
You said they, who are they at this time?
The probation office.
Okay.
The probation office, they were, at least they were helping me find housing when I was on probation. They had found me, like I said, they had found me a place to share with, a house to share with two other people. That was why they came by to let me know.
Now, I guess my final question is, have you made any preparation at all in terms of if this board decided to release you, that you already made any commitments or attempted to make commitments with a halfway house or with any other opportunities that might exist for you if you were released, sir?
No, sir, because in all honesty, I don't expect to get parole. I don't know that if I were in your shoes, I would grant parole.
I appreciate your honesty, sir. Thank you so very much. And thank you so very much, Honorable Mr. Karani, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Board Chairman, Dr. Wright. Mr. Hatfield, just a quick note, just for the sake of clarification. I think you've mentioned more than once in discussion about returning to probation, and I think you no longer have probation under the county. If you were given supervised release, you would be in parole status, and the parole conditions are different than the probation conditions, although similar. But it is a different part of the criminal justice system that provides supervised release on parole. Just for understanding. We're getting close to the end of your hearing. Is there a final statement you would like to make to the board before we go into discussion? We only ask that you don't repeat anything that you've already told us. But this is your hearing, so is there anything else that you feel is important for us to know or understand before this board goes into discussion and votes on this case?
Well, only whether I, you know, served the last 2.5 years or whether I go out tomorrow, it's, the madness is over for me. I'm done with it. I'm done with it.
Thank you, Mr. Hatfield. Oh, all right, any more?
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hatfield. The board will be going into discussion. It may sound like that we're speaking with you directly, but it is the board discussing the case amongst itself under the open meeting laws of Arizona. So if you'll just remain on the phone and listen in, we will come back to you shortly with our decision. Thank you, sir.
All right.
The board is now in discussion. For board members, I'd like to begin by saying that I think that Mr. Hatfield presents very well, and he communicates his position quite well. I appreciate that he is making no excuse for his behavior, and that it would seem that he He's had intense sex offender treatment in the state of Iowa. And I also appreciate his input on the quality of that program. He's been very open with the board. I will say, as one individual voting board member, I'm just not comfortable with the totality of his history. I think he recognizes where I'm coming from, so to speak, himself, which is to say that he has a history of sex crimes. His instant offense was for a dangerous crime against children, which he claims there's some inaccuracy in the story, but fundamentally does not deny that he committed a dangerous crime against children. There was a past history for lewd acts, and of course the other probation, pardon me, the other conviction in Iowa for sexual exploitation of a minor and numerous probation violations in which he absconded. So, with lifetime probation no longer being in play, and this collective history, I'm in the position that, in the interest of justice, he should complete his sentence, or at least we'll have another chance to see this board, but I'm of the position that he should complete his sentence, in which he will be released pretty close to the next 2 years. But that's where I'll begin the discussion. Yes, the Alderman is Gilbert.
I agree with you, Mr. Cunanis. I believe he should serve the sentence that he received. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Yes, Mr. Johnson.
I agree to that. It was, as you noted earlier, that he did have a probation violation. He did leave the state knowing that that was a violation of his probation at the time, and the fact that he's serving a 10-year sentence now as a result of getting off of lifetime probation, so he won't have lifetime probation. So it's almost a charge of decision to not be on probation, so he won't be on any probation, and he's serving a 10-year sentence as a result of it. So had he followed and done the things he needed to do while on probation, he wouldn't be incarcerated now. I agree.
I'd like to add, too, that there's a certain practicality in him completing the sentence if his end game, so to speak, is returning to Washington, in which he'd be free and clear to do that. That's not opening up the door to another period of absconding, which can be very expensive. Any further input?
No, sir.
Okay, then I'm going to go ahead and make a motion. And that is regarding Mr. Clayton Hatfield, ADC number 097860. My motion is to deny regular parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. And I am also asking, based on the year of the crime, for a 1 year set off.
Second.
Agree.
Seconded by Mr. Johnson, is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Agreed upon with Honorable Dr. Wright, the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse. I'm asking for a 1 year set off. Release type denied is for 12A411HA. And my reasons are as follows. See, it's a serious and violent offense, serious and deviant offense, trouble of victim, age of victim, bodily injury in the case of molestation, multiple victims, violation of previous probation, prior criminal history, repeat offender, second. No family or community support system. Anything else that any fellow board members wish to add? Okay, Mr. Hatfield, the board has denied regular parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge, and we gave our reasons. Were those reasons clear to you?
Oh, yeah.
Well, sir, I was sincere when I said that you presented well. I do appreciate that you're accountable for your actions, and you will be eligible to appear before this board again in approximately 1 year. So we encourage you to pursue any programming that's available to inside the Department of Corrections and to stay safe. This will conclude our hearing. Thank you, fellow board members. Thank you, Mr. Ackerman.
All right. Thank you.